Reading from Startide Rising by David Brin, Part 5, Concussion, Chapter 46, Sahat. It was evening, and the Kikwi were leaving for their hunting grounds. Sahat heard them squeaking excitedly as they gathered in a clearing west of the toppled drill tree. The hunters passed not far from the pool on their way back to a rock chimney on the southern slope of the island, chittering and puffing their lung sacks in pomp. Sahat listened until the abos were gone. Then he sank a meter below the surface and blew depressed bubbles. Nothing was going right. Denny had changed, and he didn't like it. Instead of her usual delightful skittishness, she virtually ignored him. She had listened to two of his best limericks and answered seriously, completely missing the delicious double entendre. In spite of the importance of her studies of the Kikwi, Takata Jim had ordered her also to analyze the drill tree system for Charles Dart. Twice she had gone into the water to collect samples from below the metal mound. She had ignored Sahat's nuzzling advances, or even more disturbing, petted him absently in return. Sahat realized that for all of his previous efforts to break her down, he hadn't really wanted her to change, at least not this way. He drifted unhappily until a tether attached to one of the sleds brought him up short. His new assignment kept him linked to this electrical obscenity, chafed and cramped in a tiny pool, while his real work was out in the open sea with the pre-sentience. When Jillian and Kipiru left, he had assumed their absence would free him to do pretty much what he wanted. Huh! No sooner had the pilot and the human physician left than did Toshio, of all persons, step in and assume command. I should have been able to talk rings around him. How in the five galaxies did the boy manage to get the upper hand? It was hard to remember how, but here he was, stuck, monitoring a damned robot for a pompous, egocentric chimpanzee who cared only about rocks. The dumb little robot didn't even have a brain one could talk to. You don't have conversations with microprocessors. You tell them what to do, then helplessly watch the disaster when they take you literally. His harness gave off a chime. It was time to check on the probe. Sahat chuckled a sarcastic response. Yes, in duty, lord and master, metal moron and disaster. Beep again, I'll work faster. Sahat brought his left eye even with the sled screen. He sent a pulse code to the robot, and a stream of data returned. The bot had finally digested the most recent rock sample. He ordered the probe's small memory emptied into the sled's databanks. Toshio had run him through the drill until Sahat could control the bot almost unconsciously. He made it anchor one end of a monofilament line to the rough rock, then lower itself another 50 meters. The old explanation for the hole beneath the metal mound had been discarded. The drill tree couldn't have needed to dig a tunnel a kilometer deep in search of nutrients. It shouldn't have been able to pierce the crust that far. The mass of the drill root was clearly too great to have been rotated by the modest tree that once stood atop the mound. The amount of material excavated wouldn't fit atop 10 metal mounds. It was found as sediment all around the high ridge on which the mound sat. To Sahat, these mysteries weren't enticing. They only proved once again that the universe was weird, and that maybe humans and dolphins and chimps ought to wait a while before challenging its deeper puzzles. The robot finished its descent. Sahat made it reach out and seize the cavity wall with diamond-tipped claws, then retract its tether from above. Down in stages it would go. For this little machine, there would be no rising. Sahat felt that way himself sometimes, especially since coming to Kithrup. He didn't really expect ever to leave this deadly world. Fortunately, the probe's sampling routine was fairly automatic once triggered. Even Charles Dart should have little excuse to complain. Unless... Zahat cursed. There it was again. The static that had plagued the probe since it had passed the half-kilometer mark. Toshio and Kipiru had worked on it and couldn't find the problem. The crackling was unlike any static Zahat had ever heard. Not that he was an expert on static. It had a syncopation of sorts. Not all that unpleasant to listen to, actually. Zahat had heard that some people liked to listen to white noise. Certainly nothing was more undemanding. The clock on his harness ticked away. Zahat listened to the static and thought about perversities, about love and loneliness. I swim circles like the others and learn sadly I am sightlessly sighing alone. Slowly, Zahat realized he had adopted the rhythm of the noise below. He shook his head, but when he listened again, it was still there. A song. It was a song. Zahat concentrated. It was like trying to follow all parts of a six-part fugue at the same time. The patterns interleaved with an incredible complexity. No wonder they had all thought it noise. Even he had barely caught on. His harness timer chimed, but Zahat didn't notice. He was too busy listening to the planet sing to him.